This is Live Women Authors of Achievement podcast, episode 88 with guest Anya Gozens. Hello everyone, I'm your host Daria Suvorova, and today I welcome you to a special edition of the show recorded live from the iconic Berlin State Opera, Unter den Linden. I have the privilege of delving into the world of opera and culture with Anya Gozens, the head of development at the State Opera. Well, let's set the stage first. It's essential to recognize the significance of this venue. The Berlin State Opera holds a rich cultural heritage dating back to its founding in the 18th century. Seated in the heart of Berlin, this institution has been a beacon of artistic excellence, captivating audiences with its breathtaking performances for centuries. My guest today, Anya, is a trailblazer in the world of arts and culture. With a background in art and theater studies, Anya brings a wealth of experience to her role as the head of development at the Berlin State Opera. Her passion for innovation and her dedication to making opera accessible to all have been instrumental in shaping the future of this institution. Throughout our conversation with Anya, we'll explore the intersection of art and culture in society. From discussing the role of opera in the modern world, we'll uncover the insights that resonate with listeners coming from diverse backgrounds. Whether you are a seasoned opera enthusiast or someone curious about the transformative power of arts, tonight's discussion promises to be enlightening and inspiring. And if you enjoy the show, make sure to rate it on Spotify or leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Enjoy! How wonderful that we have this special opportunity.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for coming.
Anya, I launched the podcast 3 years ago, and I could not have imagined about the opportunity that the Berlin State Opera would invite Women Authors of Achievement podcast to do a live recording here.
Oh,
thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming, Daria. I'm very, honored myself to be able to participate, and we're very honored from the house to have you here. As I told you before, we are 650 people in this opera, working in this opera.
I got lost in some of the corridors.
Yes. And that's the phantom of the opera. It's not a phantom, it's real. Because when we go over to the main building later, if you want to join, you will see it's quite big and it's, all underground.
Wait, and we're going to use a secret tunnel.
Yes, we will. Yes.
So that's very exciting.
No, thank you. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you so much, all of you.
Isn't the audience amazing? Yes. Like how just everyone's smiling and looks gorgeous.
Yes.
That's perfect. Anya, before we start, maybe can you tell us what are the pictures behind us? Who are those people?
Yes,
who are those men?
These are all the artistic directors and general music directors of State Opera. Not until the present day, because they will be on the wall when they leave. So we have Matthias Schulz as our current artistic director. And from September on, it will be the first woman in the history of State Opera.
Round of applause!
Which will be Elisabeth Sobotka. So...
So maybe as a contrast, we do like a picture or a live podcast with afterwards, like to be before and after. Gorgeous. Anya, you were born in Hamburg and earned a degree in art history, theater and film studies, and also modern German literature in Berlin. You worked for 10 years in the Center of Art and Media in Karlsruhe, including as a consultant to artistic director Peter Wiebel. So you have this amazing history working in the art industry. You even taught in the Stuttgart Academy of Art. What got you so excited about dedicating your life to the various forms of art?
That's very easy. I love art. And I would always say, as you said, the subjects that I studied, everybody said, you will never get a job. Because if you study new German literature and all of that, and I would study it again if I could choose. And I think that's very easy for me to answer because I follow that passion.
Through and within.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yes.
And just to understand, how does the State Opera, maybe if you can give us a little bit of picture, how does it contribute to the cultural fabric of Berlin? How does it influence a little bit of the city's identity, the atmosphere of the city?
I mean, we have three opera houses in Berlin, which is an amazing place to live. I mean, I think you all can relate to that. So it's a place, let's say, of abundance. In that, because we also have the Berliner Philharmonie, which is amazing. We have many orchestras. From my perspective, from perspective of development, because this is what I'm doing for the house, it's of course that every house is special. which is great because we're not challenging each other, because Deutsche Oper is very different from Berlin State Opera, and Komische Oper has a completely different profile. So our contribution as state opera is we're in the middle, in the midst of Berlin, really, and it's maybe the most, in a way, most traditional house, what you relate to when you think about opera, because we're this traditional opera house in Berlin. So, and the contribution, I mean, it's for everybody, it's different. For me, the contribution of state opera is like building a history. State opera was built, I think, in 1741 or 42. It was finished. It was the beginning of the Forum Fridericianum, where we sit here.
275 years.
Yes.
Right, to be exact. Oh my.
It's, I think, the first opera house, standalone opera house ever. Before that, opera houses were, of course, connected to a different context from the Königlichen Hof, of course. And all of that is still a legacy and tradition that Berlin State Opera stands for.
That's incredible to be working and being the head of development in those premises.
Yes, I'm very happy about
that. That's a lot of responsibility to take on.
I love what I'm doing.
Is there maybe like notable moments or performances from the house that left its legacy, something that people are still talking about today?
There are lots of productions that have been staged here, which are still like iconic. But maybe it's, I would like to point out something which might be not so in your focus, that state opera has for a long time been also known for staging first premieres. So the contemporary works, like after the Wilhelmin era, like in the 1925 on, for example, Wozzeck was staged here for the first time, many other operas. So this is very important if you see have a traditional house also having this contribution to contemporary, in the time being, contemporary productions. And in the last years, maybe some of you are, you know, connected to contemporary opera staging. We had, for example, Sleepless from Peter Erdős and others, which are also contemporary works. I tell that because many people like connect us more to the repertoire, like Tosca and all those beautiful productions, or of course the Zauberflöte, which is an iconic and very traditional and beautiful production. But I think it's very much interesting to have this because this house really connects traditional, let's say, features, very innovative drive.
Love it. But now actually let's talk about you, Anya, because I was trying to understand, my heart, you know, belongs to also different forms of art. I feel like the culture exists, the society exists when culture is there. That's something that gives us hope, intention, direction, and peace of mind, or also just as like triggers a certain emotion that makes you reflect on your own life. So for me, I was just hearing from you, I'm like, a lot of things totally align. But your role, just so I understand, you know, what does it mean to be a head of development of the state opera in Berlin? And what are maybe some of the key initiatives and projects that you would say you've been leading and that are important to you?
Head of development means, or development in general means, for this house, I'm responsible for the partnerships, which means some part of it is, of course, sponsoring. I take care of that. I'm responsible.
What kind of sponsoring?
Like corporate sponsoring.
Okay.
We have, I don't want to say the names now, but we have big corporate sponsors, which are partners of Staatsoper since many years, which is amazing because, as you all know, during the COVID years, I mean, it was difficult for everybody, but for especially people who work with the stage and are connected to the energy they create when they talk to people or when they perform, it was very hard for us, of course. And we didn't lose one single partner. So even the big corporate ones stayed with us during that time, and they didn't reduce the amount of money. And we couldn't give that much back because we weren't playing. So of course, this is one thing. We have foundations supporting us and also private people. We have a big and good friends circle, which is not in my area, but it's of course very important for houses, for every house, and because they produce a live stream in a way, you know, they have a connection to the house, which is, I think we will be talking about narratives, and people of course build narratives, and this is how I define my role. I think it's obvious that we're now coming, or maybe we're already in the time where things are fundamentally changing, and I have a big interest in people. So what I love to do is, first of all, I love music. I love it so much. I know that opera is not that easy because opera is somewhat, it looks strange sometimes when people are singing, and it's very difficult to get into it. And there are certain like barriers you have to put to the side, or you have to really get this feeling. And when you are in it and you're starting to understand it in connection with concerts, of course, which is our second occupation, which we do, there are so many doors opening. And when you start to understand that, the next door is opening and so on. It's so beautiful to connect to that. And I think if you ask me, what is your definition of my role? I would say my biggest wish is to connect people to that feeling. And it doesn't matter if it's corporate, if it's a foundation or a private person, you need to have interest in connecting people to something that you stand for and that you feel completely aligned with. And then, of course, I have to raise money. So this is, of course, something, it's part of it. But this part where you build a network, it will be more important during the upcoming years. Will get more and more important to have more and more people supporting the idea of musical theater. So this is what I also do. I connect people that I know, and I do it from like more intrinsically. I do it from my own interest in people. I try to connect them. I use our orchestra as a very well-known orchestra. The Staatskapelle Berlin is one of the oldest orchestras in the world, by the way.
Oh, wow.
It's a little bit over 450. It's very, very old. And we had Daniel Barenboim as our general music director since 1992, who's a very well-known conductor, very well-known pianist. And we had the big gift, or this orchestra was touring like internationally during the last decades. And since I'm here, I started 7 years ago. So I use these international tours during COVID in 2021, for example, when it was possible to travel for the first time again. They went to, and I had the pleasure of, accompanying them to Athens and Milan and Zurich and Vienna. And also they went to Madrid and Geneva. And I build like circles in the cities they play at. So in Athens, they're guests, and we build a circle and we get people to come over to Berlin afterwards.
That's incredible. Yes. Can we get a round of applause for...
Oh, thank you.
I mean, when you spoke about like building that loyalty, I mean, and the networks, I thought you definitely know how to create that interest of people and connect them to the purpose. I think that's just a secret sauce of your role. And I'm trying to understand, I mean, when you mentioned the importance of building strong networks, like what is your approach here and how do you ensure that loyalty of whether it's corporates or foundations or individual people, they stay even throughout the difficult times and they don't drop? Because as an example, when you mentioned 2020, 2021, most of the organizations, companies more in the business tech world, they saw a decline of those maybe partners, contributors, because a lot of people said we cannot maintain it. What is so different about your approach? How do you maintain that loyalty?
I couldn't say that. I don't know. I mean, it's not me alone. It's, of course, the whole house who's, you know, having this DNA. Of course, our current artistic director is very much into it. So it's a kind of, I think we were very lucky because we were building that up before. I couldn't say.
You just need to be around for like over 200 years. And then everyone will be like, we're with you guys. This is going to be work out. Like that everyone is like, well, 100 years ago, you went through this, now this. Yeah, you're probably going to manage this. You're like, we're going to stay around. And I mean, you mentioned that the only constant is change. And you mentioned that for you, progress is also very important personally and professionally. And you mentioned that it's crucial for you to learn and see also how others can progress and enable them. What exactly did you mean by that?
This is a bit personal. So this is something because we're talking about, and I think there was a question about innovation also, because we always ask, you know, how does a traditional art form innovate and how do you relate to the new audiences? How do you do audience development and so on? I always think it's something, you know, to have these terms, they're kind of empty to me. So I try to approach it. So how do I approach younger people? I mean, I speak to them, but I don't know. They are all different. Even older people have different abilities now and different needs. So I think that, first of all, you asked me about progress. So, I mean, progress, innovation seem to be kind of in the same, go into the same direction, of course. I think, first of all, for me personally, progress is always important. You have to let yourself progress and let others progress. That means that you have conflict. You have conflict for yourself. You have conflicts with others, maybe, and you have conflict in others, you know, also. And I think this is something that you can learn from the arts, because when you relate, for example, to a musical piece, you have all these different energies within the musical piece. You have the tension and you have the relaxation, and everything is in there. So you have to let yourself go with it. I don't know if Wagner is the best example. If you sat through a Wagner opera, if you didn't try it out, you will have some pieces of in it you can't stand it, because the tension gets so big and you want to go out. And I don't know anybody who hasn't been saying the same. I don't know anybody who said, okay, no, Wagner is so relaxing and so great. So it's not only about Wagner, it's others also. So you have to, when you do that, like professionally, and go in it many times, sometimes a week and so on, do it regularly, you have this feeling that, okay, this relates to processes in life. Because to really get to the point where you're interested in something, so you sometimes have to go through the tension. And this is what I meant when I said that you have to let others progress, which is sometimes also very difficult. And I think that relates to a question of developments in society that you can learn. And this is why I said it's getting personal. My deepest understanding of it is that you can learn through music to release the tension which is produced, like also on a level of society, to learn to step back. You don't have to have the same understanding like the other one, or the same, you know, worldview like the other one, but to let them progress means to accept it and step back and relate to this notion of that there are worlds upon worlds. And this is what I see in music. Wow. This is so important. And this is why I said that it's one of the biggest forces in society that we have, because music doesn't relate to something material, apart from the instruments, of course, and the people who are also, in a way, material, who play them. But music is not like photography or other arts relating to something, yeah, material that you can see, you know, adapting it or something else. It's about energies. And this is why everybody, every being, every sentient being can relate to it. And this is why I think it's such a big force. And almost for people like me and my like colleagues who are working in a place like that, to me, I see it almost like an obligation to be able to open houses, these institutions, to more people so that more people can relate to that idea if they want to.
Beautiful. Shall we do another round of applause? I mean, Anya, there was a moment I was sitting, at first I thought to myself, how dare I spend an evening watching a series or a movie? I should way going to take my partner and go to an enlightening and just feel those emotions, because you're absolutely right. Especially going to opera houses, whether it's more classical pieces or contemporary, it never leaves you emotionless. There's something you will feel, whether it's a feeling of empathy, anger, whether it's happiness, whether it's hope, but there is always something that triggers you deep inside. And it's an interesting, as you said, it's not material, but there is this impact that's in you as you leave. And almost they always say, right, to have a little moment after when you visit an opera house to talk to someone, to exchange those feelings. I usually need to talk or call someone and be like, did you feel that, or you disagree? But beautifully said. And I think like everyone will take the coupon right now and be like, so
please
let me enlighten myself. But yet there are some challenges. I mean, times are changing, interests are changing. And I mean, I'm curious to understand, I'm sure that there are some challenges that opera houses and maybe specifically, you know, the industry or specifically Berlin State Opera, they face today. Like what those challenges are and how can those challenges be addressed?
Of course, there are challenges. I wouldn't like to speak about it on a general level because I'm not on an institutional level, because I see it from the perspective of development, which is my occupation in this house. The other questions would be like programming and how do you, you know, relate to the overall understanding of what an opera house is doing. But from the perspective of development, which means, first of all, that you connect to people and to others, of course, the parameters, how people connect to things, are changing. and the time span that people are concentrating on things are changing. So this is, of course, a very big challenge because, I mean, I mentioned Wagner, but it's not only that, but, you know, to sit in an opera house, we have 1,356 seats. And when do you have the occasion to sit together with that amount of people and concentrate on the same thing? It surely was different like 50 or 100 years ago, and now it's other times. So this is why I'm referring to more the questions which concern my area of action in this house. So of course, and when I communicate these things to potential partners, you have to address it because they want to address a certain group of people and their interest in things and so on. So of course, this is fundamentally changing. But on the level of how the foreign institution would be a different question.
You did mention one of the interviews I was reading that the state opera, whether in general or Berlin State Opera, are trying to become more Instagrammable, to use this inappropriate term in our discussion today. But also, they're trying to emphasize, of course, the intrinsic value of this live immersive experiences of visiting an opera house. So what is the actual balance that you need to strike between making it attractive to younger audiences, making it Instagrammable, but also balancing out the more of the immersive, live, classical experience that people should expect when visiting an opera house?
This is a question for my marketing colleague. So
I think maybe you heard something she said.
No, of course, I'm also a visitor, so I have an opinion about this. So first of all, I think in this case, it's made beautifully because the way we do things, transport them to the outside, is very much connected to what I see on the inside. So I think it's this authenticity, which everybody is talking about a lot, is very important for that. And as you said, we're dealing here with an art form, which the live stream, you know, the thing which makes it come alive is the live moment. So, of course, you will have to have approaches how to bring people who never entered the opera into the house. And of course, all of this media is very important to us. And we do it, and we have definitely have increased our amount of guests and visitors through Instagram. And we have a very broad international audience. But this is also a process which is ongoing. As you said, it's not only that you have to relate to the technology, but to the abilities that people are developing in these years, which is, you know, I see it very positively, I have to say.
That's very good to hear. And in general, I mean, with the role of music creating that sense of harmony and solidarity, I would imagine that after the pandemic, people felt there is a need to experience more of that immersive experience because the realization of what you had, you usually don't appreciate it, right? There was a moment where you actually don't experience something that you realize the need for it. Did you see like spikes of interest from also from your perspective in partnerships and people wanting to be friends of the house or partnering up with the house, being interested in developing it further? And same for the audiences. Did you feel that spike after the pandemic?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. We had more younger people coming up. Was the first time that I sat behind a young woman with an Irokesenschnitt in the opera, which was, that was very palpable to have, that we noticed that everybody came back and we had that, but the audience was much younger after the pandemic.
I would love to sit, not maybe someone in front of me with Irokesen, but next to them.
It was like narrow.
You were like in between. But there's another part you mentioned, the importance of fostering a sense of self-efficacy. Does it relate to the progress, or that was another thought you had?
We are facing now new times with new needs. And of course, these structures are built up like all of society, and opera houses are only one tiny, small part of that. So I think it's, well, how can I make that more
digestible?
Yeah, I think it's when you have this experience. You ask about how I do it with the partners.
Right.
I do the same way. We have partners that we speak a lot to. And what I also did was I developed a circle of new ones, young entrepreneurs from Berlin who are not having startups, but they're becoming bigger now. And because they have a good network and they are usually very interested in what we are doing, they don't know it, But when you talk to them, they say, okay, no, I can, you know, this is something that I can relate to because in my own work as an entrepreneur, you know, I have these same challenges and I have things, you know, I relate to that. And they connect to us and we do, like, we meet, we go to the opera, we see things and so on. And they bring people in, they bring a network in, which is interested in getting to know more about the Opera House. And I think this is something which is very special in Berlin. So the way I build development for this house would not be the same, of course, like in Munich or in other, or in Frankfurt, because we have a very different surrounding. And I try to use all the positive aspects that the city has to bring these kinds of streams and to connect the house to the streams, because institutions can be, as I said, we're 650 people. It's a big one. So we have very good ideas here in the house, but we have a very, you know, narrow, we're not many people in these departments which deal with marketing and so on, so and development. So we need to connect to people who are used to bring their ideas into reality very quickly. So usually entrepreneurs work like that because, you know, they don't have time. They have an idea and they are, have a different working mode. So, and I thought this is so interesting. This is typical Berlin. And this is something that for an institution and like a, this big ship that we are, is very important to have this changing of energies, like this conservative energy that we have, this all these in a positive way, like all what we can bring in, but also sometimes to change the pace and have really, you know, connect to this kind of, okay, we want that, this is an idea and we bring it into reality. And this is what I did with those people who are building up this together with this new network. Mm-hmm.
Did you also feel the support from the house doing this? Because of course, that's also very right, different perspective.
Yes.
So you have the full support. But I can imagine there's always some tension and people who are afraid
that's
of the change.
Yeah, yeah. This is...
You deal with
this
it.
This is what I was saying about progress.
Yeah. You like it. Are you a good mediator?
Well, I don't know if I'm... I have an idea with why I'm working here. So I have an idea. I have a wish.
Yeah.
So to say, I have a wish. As you said, it's not my first job. I was... working for this art institution for almost 10 years and was curating and doing catalogs. And, you know, I've been lecturing like all internationally and had all of these things. So I studied here in Berlin and I always wanted to work in this house because this house was so interesting for me because it combines, it's historically so interesting. And I'm very interested in the people who in the orchestra, for example, people who work here. I'm very interested in all of these things. I think this is what a house like this is made of. And because I have this idea of why I think it's so important to work with music and bring more people into contact with this, so positive, because what it creates can be so positive. And this is a bit of a hard part. It's very, very important for institutions who have the capacity, like this one, to always pave a positive way. You know, always focus on the positive, on the positivity which comes out of the... We can produce the highest quality in music. We have the best singers. We have the best musicians. It's all on this such a high level. And what it brings is so much positive effect on what house and institution like this can do. And this is what I focus on. I focus on what I think is most important. And I think it's important to bring that out for younger people, to pave this positive way for younger people, of course, to bring them into contact with music as soon as possible, but also for older people. So, because we can do it. I believe in that. This is force that a house like this can bring. And this is the idea. And of course, you know, not everybody is thinking the same.
One of the attendees has been following the podcast since its inception. Actually, there's quite a few, but this person wrote this question and expressed appreciation for overall the powerful stories that are shared on the podcast. We talked about the narrative and storytelling, and maybe like in one sentence, how do you believe storytelling can be used as a tool for advocacy and community engagement within the cultural sector? And also maybe to elaborate on that, how do you incorporate those narratives into the state opera?
Everybody's talking about sustainability so much, which is important. And we had this discussion with potential partners, like, and they are focusing on sustainability now. They don't want to do arts culture anymore. They want to focus on sustainability, which is good. It's not one either or the other. But I think, as somebody who's been working in the arts for quite some time, the most important thing is, if you want to really relate to like ecological sustainability, you need to be able to produce a narrative. This is what I believe. You need to be able to produce a narrative where you are yourself in society. Otherwise, sustainability will just be like a buzzword, because you need to, you know, adapt your lifestyle because it's not sustainable, which is good. It's good to adapt lifestyle. But it's much more important to be able to build a narrative about yourself. Why am I doing things? Is this my position? You know, not overthinking, but really, I think it's getting, and this is the power of music, it's getting more intuitive then. You're able to position yourself. And then I'm completely convinced that you're, on the one hand, you're living a more ecological, sustainable lifestyle because you have a position, because you built the narrative yourself and not somebody else. And second thing is, what can be more sustainable than relating to the arts? Because the arts, and especially music, help you to build that narrative for yourself. It's obvious. And I think it's something worth, you know, communicating that, because we have, for example, partners, head partners in the banking sector, and they're always talking about, okay, this is sustainable. We say, yes, but have you been thinking about, you've been, you know, accompanying us for such a long time that you and us, we're building together narrative because we bring your guests, you know, we share time together. Mm-hmm. And all of these things, and we're relating to each other, which is very important that you relate, not only like visually over Instagram or something else, because it's, you know, mm-hmm. but to relate in that, in the moment being. And this is a big contribution of the houses, because the ability to build narrative is really like in the DNA of what is being produced here.
That's amazingly said. It comes to my last question. I almost feel like Daniel is nodding his head, or maybe that was my feeling on the back, but we also want to be in time for the tour. And maybe, Anya, you can tell us more on the tour and the guests have other questions. But the last question is very consistent on the show, which is about women authors of achievement. Mm. One of the women authors of achievement is you, Anya, clearly, because just hearing what you do, your approach, before this podcast, we knew each other, but some of the answers you gave were new to me, and I feel inspired and moved by your work, your dedication, and the purpose you've seen. You started something and you always knew exactly where you belong and the change you want to drive. It's also an entrepreneurial journey and it's a dedication to what you do. So I wish us all that kind of North Star of somewhere to lead forward to. And of course, being such a woman author of your own achievements, who do you look up to? Which woman comes to your mind that she would say she is an author of her own achievements in life?
Oh, first of all, thank you so much for what you said. It really touches me. So thank you. And the second thing was, there's so many amazing women I couldn't, you know, figure out. I chose one, which might not fit into the context. I didn't want to choose one who's alive, but she's dead. And I've been reading her autobiography recently, which is, you all know her, it's Diana Freeland, editor of Vogue, of course. And I was reading that, and I think what she was pointing out about fashion in this, if you haven't read it, biography, please read it, because it's so funny.
Have you guys heard of that book or? No, you see,
yes, please, you know, it's really nice because...
You're also a first guest who mentioned her name, so was like, ooh.
Yeah, Diana Freeland. And she has been first female, I think, editor of Vogue and then of Harper's Bazaar, if it's the right information. And I think it was in that book, because there's the second one, that she said, and, you know, really hooked me, because she said that music is something which is so powerful because you relate to it on an emotional level, of course, a physical level, because you feel it, as you said, and intellectually. So this is why it's so rich. And so this is why the force is so big. So I really could relate
to
that. So I chose her.
It resonated and you were like, I like you.
Yes, I love her.
You were like, you're my kind of person. Yes. Well, thank you for recommending a new person that haven't been mentioned yet on one of those questions. And everyone is like, ooh, haven't heard yet. I love that everyone is smiling. I think this means that everyone is ready for another round of wine and tour and all the good stuff. And since we're going to stick around, make sure that there's some other questions you have to Anya, chat to her, ask her around. I think there's like things we're going to deep dive later today. And there's something you wanted to mention.
Oh yeah, I have a gift. Do you mean that?
There's additional
yes.
gift. There's
I
so many
additional
gifts.
Gift. Yes, it's gift day. It's a real gift. I mean, the others are real gifts too, but this is like really special because when we were talking, I said it might be an opportunity to sneak into a rehearsal, which is not possible because we have a production. Would be not so productive to go. But if you want, and this is really special because it's not open to the public at all, our next premiere will be in the beginning of June, I think, and in the end of May, it should be, I don't know the exact date, will be a Generalprobe, a general rehearsal, mm-hmm. I think it's called in English. And if you want...
From where do we watch it?
Oh, you will sit in the best seats, of course. And have
great.
And yes, and you could, of course, tell Daya to if you want to come, you can tell me either way you want it.
Yeah. And what is the maximum number of people that can join?
Let's figure out.
But whoever is here, they
of course,
open
yes.
to
yes.
amazing. Yay!
It's, yes, you're welcome. It's Chovanchina and the regisseur is Klaus Gut. So you shouldn't miss it.
So really, really end of great. May, do we have a date or not?
Not yet, but I will tell you. And you
okay,
can, you know.
As soon as yeah. Anya tells me, I will write this group and I will let you know and you tell me if you're able to come and we will return for this mm-hmm. beautiful production. Great. Thank
Looking
you so much,
forward.
Anya.
Thank you so much. My
Thank
pleasure.
You.
Thank you for joining us today. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please don't forget to leave us a review. We're always excited to read them. If you want to interact with us, the guests, or the podcast listeners, then head over to our Instagram page at waa.berlin. And while you're there, make sure to check our webshop. Thank you again for listening, and we're looking forward to being back soon.